Our Divrei Torah are sponsored by Janet and Ira Grosser for Yizchus for Refuah Shlema for Avraham Abba Ben Shendel, as well as by Marilyn and David Cutler, Le'ilu Nishmas David's mother, Mrs. Ellen Cutler, Leah Bas Yosef, Aleha Hashalom. Is Marilyn here? I don't know if she's here yet. Can you hear me now? Okay, so we hope that they will have both a Refuah Shlema as well as an Aliyas HaNeshama. And for those who are available right after the shiur, we are going to continue with splitting up the Tehillim. For those who want to stay for a couple of minutes, there is a Tehillim Mechulak that is going to be on the Bima. Shandy Hammer has brought it, and everyone is welcome to participate. Shouldn't take too long to finish the entire Tehillim from the beautiful crowd that we have here today. Sefer Shemos, as the Ramban terms it, Sefer HaGalus V'HaGeula. Sefer Shemos is the Sefer which is all about the Galus, where the Jewish people found themselves in Mitzrayim, and then ultimately the birth of a nation, the Geula, the process of redemption. And that is so much of what we read about over the next couple of weeks and months, and it's something that so, once again, seems to be timeless and so profound, and it continues to be relevant to all of our lives. And that's what I wanted to do this morning, just look a little bit into our Parsha and think and reflect about how much the Parsha is speaking to us in our generation and in our time, particularly in our situation. Moshe Rabbeinu, at the very beginning of our Parsha, how are we introduced to Moshe Rabbeinu? And this is very interesting because Moshe Rabbeinu is referred to as the Adon HaNevi'im. He is the greatest prophet who ever lived. He was the most sublime, holy individual, the most elevated soul. And Moshe Rabbeinu, we're told, Vayhi bayamim ahem vayigdal Moshe. Moshe Rabbeinu got older. And at that moment, Vayetze Alecha Vayar Besiblosam, he goes out to his brothers and he sees how much they are struggling. He sees how difficult their lives are. And what does he notice? Vayar Ish Mitzri Make Ish Ivri Me'achav. He sees that there is an Egyptian who is hitting a Jew, Me'achav, from his brothers. Vayifen Kovacho. He looks in both directions. Vayar Ki Einish. And he sees that there is nobody there at the time. And immediately he reacts, he responds, Vayachas HaMitzri Vayitmeneo Bachol. He hits the Mitzri, doesn't just hit him, but he kills the Mitzri, and he buries him in the dust. And then, as we know, the story continues. Moshe Rabbeinu is then surprised to learn that somebody was watching, somebody was noticing what was happening, and he realizes that his life is in danger, he runs away. Achei Noda HaDavar. Now this is very fascinating. Moshe Rabbeinu, who is the most important personality in the entirety of Torah, not just in the entirety of Torah, but the entirety of our religion. Everything rests on the shoulders of Moshe Rabbeinu. You would say that the Ribono Shel Olam should introduce him to us in a certain fashion that is befitting of someone who is about to fill that role. So what is the first foray that we have into his life? Moshe Rabbeinu goes and he kills someone. That's a very strange introduction to the greatest Torah personality of all the millennia of Jewish history. That is a very strange way to come to know Moshe Rabbeinu. I'd like you to know the leader of your people is a person who just loves to be involved in conflict. So it sounds like a strange way to get involved. Now the truth is, it may just happen to be that Moshe Rabbeinu came out of the palace and that very first day, this is what he chanced upon. Had he come across an opportunity to help a young family that didn't have the opportunity to take care of themselves, I'm sure he would have done the same. And had he come across a young child who didn't have any parents, who was a yasum, or if he came across an almana, I'm sure he would have taken care of them as well. It just so happens that the first thing that he bumped into was Vayar Ish Mitzri Make Ish Ivri, and therefore he had to spring into action. It can't be that that's the only reason why this is here. The Torah is very carefully formulated, and we know that every story in the Torah and every word in the Torah is there for a very particular reason and purpose. So why is it that the Torah introduces us to this? And after all, what justification did Moshe Rabbeinu have to kill the Mitzri? The Mitzri, there's no indication that the Mitzri was actually killing the Jew. So you can say it's pikuach nefesh. So pikuach nefesh means hurt him in the leg. Don't kill him. Why would you kill him? And this is something that many of the Mefarshim struggle with. Chazal struggle with it. What right did Moshe Rabbeinu actually have to kill the Mitzri? And the answer that we find in the Mefarshim on Chumash is something that really resonates, and from that we understand why it is that the Torah introduces us to Moshe Rabbeinu with this story. The Sfarno writes in his commentary on Chumash, that the reason why Moshe Rabbeinu got involved is because mitzad ha'achva hisorer lehinake. It says that he saw one of his brothers was being hit. Not one of the Jews, one of his brothers. And because he felt like a brother to every Jew around the community, whether he knew them or he didn't, let's remember, Moshe Rabbeinu really did not have a relationship with the Jewish community. He was growing up in the palace of Paro. He did not have friends from school. He didn't have other families that he was spending time with. But he felt an innate connection, not just a connection of nationhood, he felt a connection of brotherhood. And he understood, if my brother is being hurt, his orer lehinakem, I'm going to make sure that my brother will not be hurt. It doesn't matter what's going on, but that's what I'm going to do. Because I feel a sense of brotherhood. And that, in a nutshell, is Moshe Rabbeinu. It's not about conflict, and it's not about murder, and it's not about hurting people. It's about understanding what it means to be a brother to another person. And you may know the person, you may not know the person. It's about understanding what it means to be in the position that we're in as part of the Jewish people, who take responsibility for one another and who stand up when our brothers are being hurt. And how relevant is this? More than, I can't say more, because in every generation it's relevant, but certainly today, to not just watch what's going on, to not just understand what's happening, but to really feel a sense of brotherhood, to understand that when somebody is going through a difficult time, it is my brother. And the same way, if God forbid something happened to your brother or your sister, you would be frantic to try to do whatever you can to save them, to help them, to take them out of that difficult situation that they find themselves in. That's how we need to feel. I think every morning, it's so sad and it's so unfortunate that every morning we turn on our phones and we see that the IDF is so sad to announce another two chayalim who lost their lives the evening before. To ask that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Rabbi Leibowitz mentioned to me over the weekend, to ask that HaKadosh Baruch Hu do a miracle that nobody should lose their lives is asking for a miracle. We know that in war and conflict, people lose their lives. But we are allowed to ask for a nes nistar. We are allowed to ask for a private miracle that is not so obvious. So Rabbi Leibowitz told me that Rabbi Yisrael Reisman from Flatbush told him, it's not appropriate to daven that nobody should die. That's a miracle. That's an open miracle. But it is appropriate to ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu, maybe tomorrow nobody should die. Maybe we should have a pause for one day or 2 days that nobody should lose their lives. But whatever it is, I ask myself, how do I feel? I have 4 nephews in the army. So how do I feel when I turn on the news every day and I see who it is that's been announced? How do I feel when I see it's not my nephew? How do my sisters feel every day when they turn on the news and they see it's not their child? Of course, naturally, we feel relieved. But is that an appropriate reaction? We feel relieved because it's not us, but it is us. And that is our introduction to Moshe Rabbeinu. Vayar ish mitzri make ish ivri me'echav. Moshe Rabbeinu sees that not another member of the Jewish community was in danger, but he sees that his brother is in danger. It's my nephew. It's my brother. It's my grandchild. It's my relative. And when it's my relative, I respond very differently than I would for a stranger. Sometimes you go to the train station in Manhattan and you see strange things that are going on, and the first thing you do is, I'm getting out of here. This has nothing to do with me. I don't want to be near this. This is not my problem. I didn't start this. I didn't get involved. And I don't want to be involved. So you walk away. You don't walk away when it's your brother. Everybody knows. You're driving on the highway and you see a Jew who has a problem. He's pulled over. We all pull over. That's what happens. That's what we do. I will say, I was a little surprised a couple of years ago. I was coming back from a wedding, 11 o'clock at night. You remember. And I had a massive accident. And basically what happened was I was on the Grand Central, a car, a drunk driver seemingly came off of a ramp. There was very few people on the highway, which was a big miracle in and of itself. And the driver dragged me 4 lanes of the highway, pinned me against the divider, all 4 of my tires popped off, the car was totaled, and I crawled out the back without a scratch. And I feel very, very grateful, and he just drove off. So it was a hit and run. a taxi who was watching the whole thing pulled over, and he was in shock, and he said, "Do you want to wait in my car?" I said, "I don't even know what I'm supposed to be doing right now." And then I start getting texts from people in shul who were like, "Is that you on the side of the highway?" They were all driving back from the same wedding. I wrote back, "Yes." I thought when you write yes, people would turn around and come help you, but no. I actually called Aaron, who came out at 11:30 at night to save me, but everybody else just kept going. So please don't do that. Forget about the rabbi. If you don't like him, leave him on the side. But every other person, you should be understanding enough and turn around and go help them. It's 11:30 at night, and they're with some taxi driver who's trying to help, but it's the right thing to do. We help people when we see that they are our brothers, because we understand this is how brothers behave toward one another. So that's the first introduction we have to Moshe Rabbeinu, because Moshe Rabbeinu makes us understand what it means to be brothers, what it means to live as Jews. And it's something that I think about a lot today. There's a lot of unity, and there's a lot of beautiful display of Achdus, but do we feel like brothers? It's much easier to write a check than it is to actually feel like brothers. Someone said to me this past week, "It's so interesting that you still cry when we say Tehillim." I said, "It's so interesting to me that you don't." I don't know. Maybe you don't talk to enough people in Israel who actually have children who are sacrificing their lives. Maybe you don't talk to enough parents in Israel who lost children. Maybe you have never been in touch in the last 2.5 months with anybody who's a member, a family member of one of the Chatufim. And that's why you don't cry, because you have nothing to cry about. You don't understand. Moshe Rabbeinu explains to us, you have to feel that it's Ish Ivri Mei Echav. It's not just that we're part of a nation. It's not just that we feel an Achdus. It's that we need to feel, this is my nephew. This is my brother. This is my grandchild. And that's part of maybe what's difficult as this war continues to go on. It's hard to continue to feel that emotion, but it's not hard if you really take perspective and understand the situation that people are living through every single moment of every single day. The Gemara Maseches Sanhedrin writes in Daf Nun Ches that whoever hits a Jew is ki'ilu soter lo shel hashchina. It says, if you are hitting the Ribono Shel Olam. We are the representatives of the Ribono Shel Olam in this world. We are the Am HaNivchar. Like the Navi Yeshaya writes, Atem Eidai Va'ani El, I am God, but you are my messengers. You are my witnesses. You are the witnesses that there's a God in the world. We are the conscience of the world, as Hitler said it so beautifully. Sorry to quote him, Yimach Shemo, but he said it right. We are the conscience of the world. It's what he wrote in Mein Kampf. And he's correct. We are supposed to be the conscience of the world. And therefore, says the Gemara, whoever decides to hit the Jewish people is really, in essence, attacking the Ribono Shel Olam himself. And that is why in our parsha we are told, Eya Asher Eya, the Ribono Shel Olam tells Moshe Rabbeinu, I want you to tell the Jewish people, I want you to give over the message to them, Eya Imahem Begalas Zu, the Eya Imahem Begalas Acheres. I'm going to be holding their hands through this galus in Mitzrayim, but I want you to know that I'm going to be there with them in every subsequent galus as well. And Moshe Rabbeinu says, it's bad enough that we're in galus now. We have to already tell them the forecast of what's going to be in the future. We have to tell them there's going to be another exile. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, this is the story of the Jewish people, but they should know from the outset, Eya Asher Eya, which means I'm going to be with them now, but I'm always going to be with them in the future as well. Now that I mentioned that pasuk, I do remember many years ago when I was a young child, we went to an OU convention and one of the Sephardic chief rabbis was there. I don't remember if it was Rabbi Avadi Yosef or Mordechai Eliyahu. One of them was there who came in special from Israel to be at this convention. And I remember that they wanted to do something special in honor of the chief rabbi, so they ordered some kind of chair from, what's it called in Israel? The place that makes all the wood benches. Forgetting. Kibbutz Lavi. Kibbutz Lavi, I don't know if they sent it or the OU had ordered it, whatever it was, they had a really nice looking chair that they put the chief rabbi in. So chief rabbi was sitting there on Shabbos, my father was sitting next to him, I was sitting next to my father, and I noticed on the side of the chair there were these, I wasn't paying attention to davening, I was paying attention to the chair. So I saw on the side of it there were all kinds of things that were carved out in wood, which was really, really beautiful. But it was a big burning bush that said, Eya Asher Eya. And I turned to my father and I asked him, are you allowed to sit on a chair that has the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu on it? So it became a whole big scene as to whether or not we were actually able to use this chair. It was fascinating. So if you're planning on making a chair, maybe don't put the sneh with the words, the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu on it, but it was a very, very interesting point. One of the Svarim on Chumash writes, Vayavidu Mitzrayim es b'nei Yisrael b'farach, which loosely translated means the Jewish people were being worked really hard. Vayavidu Mitzrayim, they made the Jewish people work harder than they had ever expected. B'farach means backbreaking labor. But one of the Mefarshim writes, Vayavidu Mitzrayim es b'nei Yisrael, as the Egyptians were continuing to make the Jewish people suffer, Vayavidu, it was making them feel a sense of avoda. It was making them feel a sense of closeness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Their avodas Hashem, their connection to the Ribono Shel Olam continue to grow. And that is what we're seeing once again now. As we have people who are struggling to deal with the realities, for some people, it's pushing them away from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but for others, it is making them feel much, much closer. They can't really quantify why it is that they're having that reaction, why they're having that response. But we see so many people who are responding and reacting in that way by feeling closer, vayavidu. As they are being pushed, as they are being pressured, they are continuing to feel closer to the Ribono Shel Olam. Now Moshe Rabbeinu notices that there is a burning bush, vahasneh einenu ukal, and the sneh is for some reason not being consumed, and that is a very strange occurrence, which makes Moshe Rabbeinu wonder, what is it about the sneh? What is special about this story that is being put in front of me? Now, for many people, I think, we would notice such a thing and then move on with life. But Moshe Rabbeinu teaches us, when you see something, pay attention to it. Internalize it. Allow yourself to really appreciate what it is. Don't just move on to the next newsreel, to the next story, to the next WhatsApp. Pay attention to what it is. I was so inspired. I know it's strange to quote a basketball player, especially that I know nothing about basketball. But this past week, I read an article of an interview that the highest paid basketball player did with some news agency. And I was so inspired. It's very strange to say that I was very inspired, but I really was extremely inspired by the interview. His contract is the highest NBA contract, $267 million. I don't know over the course of how long, but that's a nice sum of money. And he's from Serbia, I forgot his name. And basically did an interview about how much he hates being in the spotlight and how much he hates being a celebrity. And he said, why is it when I go out for dinner with my wife, I can't just sit for dinner with my wife? Why is it when I'm going with my children somewhere, everybody has to come over to me and ask for a picture and ask me to sign something? I'm not interested. So he said he looks forward to the day when he will retire and he will no longer have to be in this celebrity status. I don't think that's going to change. But he said the first thing he plans to do when he retires is throw out his phone. I was amazed. Throw out his phone. It doesn't say he's going to get a kosher phone. He's going to throw out his phone because he said, my phone does not allow me to live in the moment. My phone always makes me think about, what does this person want from me? And how am I going to react to that? And I have to read this and I have to be on top of that. I don't want my phone. And he said, when I die, I hope on my tombstone it will not say that I was the greatest basketball player of my generation, but rather it will say I was the greatest dad. I was really, really impressed. I actually sent him an email. Not that I know how to get in touch with these people. It was one Google search, and I found his email address, and I sent him an email because I was so inspired. And I was thinking, so we have two options of what to do when we read an article like that. Now, you're lucky. You didn't see the article, so you have to do nothing. But now I'm sharing it with you. So what do you do? When you see something like that, what do you do? What's the takeaway? Most people's takeaway is, move on with life. Go to the next story that comes up on Fox News or CNN. But you can't be that way. There's a reason why you saw this article. There's a reason why he did this interview. Why did they just talk to him about this? I have no idea. Maybe it's to remind me that I should get rid of my phone, which would be a blessing. But all of us have the opportunity to learn from things that are in front of us if only we are willing to pay attention to them. Moshe Rabbeinu, Vayar Hashem Kisar Leros. Why did the Ribono Shel Olam choose Moshe Rabbeinu? Because he noticed Kisar Leros. Moshe Rabbeinu was walking down the street, walking in wherever he was, and he noticed something, and he stopped. Kisar Leros. He stopped everything he was doing to focus on what was happening in front of him. We've all read about the bystander effect. What is the bystander effect? How can it be? Something terrible is going on, and nobody reacts. What, we're all so evil? We're all so callous? The answer is no. We just have a million things going on, and it's not really my problem. It's not really my issue. The answer is it is your problem and it is your issue. There's a reason why you're here. There's a reason why this is happening in front of you. And Moshe Rabbeinu notices things and he takes focus and he stops everything else that he's doing in order to pay attention to what it is that's there. And the Ribbono Shel Olam says, I appreciate that about Moshe Rabbeinu. Kisar Liros, that he's willing to stop everything he's doing and focus on what's happening in front of him. Put all the noise out to the side and allow yourself to notice what it is that's happening in front of you. So he has this image of the sneh. Vahasneh einenu ukal. And he has a burning bush that for some reason is not being consumed. The Alkut Shimoni writes on this week's Parsha that perhaps what the symbolism of that is, if you look carefully, you'll see that the word sneh is written four times. And the reason why it's written four times is because we know that there are supposed to be four different iterations of galus, four different iterations of exile that the Jewish people will live through. And what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is teaching us, as the Yalkut Shimoni is, Hasneh einenu ukal. Yes, the Jewish people are going to go through a burning hell, and they're going to go through a terrible experience one time and another time and again, but always remember Hasneh einenu ukal. The Jewish people will not be destroyed. They will not be consumed. And there are times when a large population of the Jewish people are going to go through a very difficult time. There are times when a large population of the Jewish community will be wiped out. Rahman al-Islam. But Hasneh einenu ukal. The Jewish people will not be consumed. And that fire will continue to burn. The Ner Hashem Nishmas Adam will continue to burn. This past week, you know, I feel like in between every Tuesday morning is a whole lifetime with everything that happens. There's so much that's going on. And we can just get depressed if we read the news every day and follow what's happening, as we all should be watching and following. But I think also it's important to be uplifted. As I spoke last week, there's so much to be uplifted by. I don't know if anybody here watched the video yesterday from the mother of Binyamin Early. It was such an amazing video. If you haven't seen it, you should watch it. I actually was in touch with her yesterday. I was so inspired by her clip. She spoke to, I don't know if it's her own community or a different community in Israel. She spoke in English about, was it in English or English subtitles? One or the other. She spoke about where she found her son's wish list that he wrote at 16 or 17 years old. What are the things that he wants to accomplish in his life? First of all, to have a child who actually sits down at 16 or 17 years old and writes what they want to accomplish is amazing. Whether you agree with what he wanted to accomplish or not, and whether you think it's the goals that you want to aspire to, doesn't matter. And that wasn't her point. You don't have to have the same wish list as he had. Just because he had certain interests doesn't mean you have to. But her point was, and I took it very profoundly, her point was, do you have a wish list? Is there anything you aspire toward? Is there anything you're working toward? Is there any goal that actually matters to you? On her son's wish list, it said, I hope someday that I will be humble. 16 years old. Who writes like that? I hope someday that I'll be humble. To say that it's not on my wish list would be embarrassing. It's not on my wish list because I never even thought it should be on a wish list. But it shows a perspective. There's so much to be inspired by. So one of the things that happened last week was, unfortunately, a young man by the name of Yonatan Luber lost his life. He was killed in Gaza in the fighting. And his levaya was last week. His wife, Avia, spoke at the levaya. And she said she was so jealous of her husband, not now that he died, but while they were married together. She was jealous of how deeply profound his love for Eretz Yisrael was. So there are a lot of reasons to be jealous of other people. Again, the Torah says, Lo Sachmot, and the Torah says, we shouldn't be jealous of others. But it's a human emotion, and sometimes we get caught up in it. So what are you jealous of in other people? What makes you jealous of another person? So we live in Chutz Laaretz. We have a clouded vision here. We don't have the right perspectives all the time. So maybe we're jealous of the homes other people build, or the cars other people drive, or the businesses that they have, or the successes that they are proud of. Whatever it is that people are jealous of. What is she jealous of her husband for? None of the above. She said, I'm jealous. Kama ahavta es ha'aretz azos. how much you love this land. Kisha Yisa Medaber Alea, when he used to talk about Eretz Yisrael, Hayiti Mikana, I was jealous of you. I wish that I had the passionate love for Eretz Yisrael that you had. That itself is a Musar Shmuz on its own. That what to be jealous of another person of is their love for Eretz Yisrael. Amazing. She says, before you went out to war, I davened one tefillah. Al tamus bifanai. I asked HaKadosh Baruch Hu, don't let my husband die before me. She's a young woman. Another 2 months, I'm going to give birth, she says. I don't know how I'm going to do this. So they had a number of haspedim at the Levaya. One of them was the grandfather, whose name is Rav Shmuel Yaniv. Rav Shmuel Yaniv got up and said the following. I want to focus on two things that he mentioned. Number one, he says, Anachnu dor shel goalim. We are a generation of redeemers. We are not a generation of people being oppressed. We are a generation of goalim. Anashim shelo rotzim lehanos mehalakicha. We don't want to take from anyone. We want to conquer. We want to build. We want to progress. Anachnu rotzim liyos rak goalim latzeis. We want to be able to accomplish everything in Eretz Yisrael in order that we should have a functioning society, to be able to give to the entire Jewish people the opportunity to live b'shalom u'v'shalva in Eretz Yisrael. What a perspective. And he said that his grandson really personified that. Now, you may not be aware that Rav Shmuel Yaniv, who is the grandfather, is also the grandfather of two young men, Halel and Yagel, who were killed a few months ago, together in Hawara. So this grandfather now lost his third grandchild in less than a year. And he gets up at the Levaya, and he's holding one arm around his son, who lost two children a few months ago, and around his son-in-law, who just lost his son. And he asked the entire assembly that was there to please join him, because he wants to sing with all of them. So what did he sing? He gets up and he encourages everyone to sing a song that they sing in Israel. The words are, Asher b'charbanu mikol ha'amim v'nasan lanu es tarasa. And for a few minutes, the hundreds of people who were there come together to sing this song, Asher b'charbanu mikol ha'amim v'nasan lanu es tarasa. The grandfather then sees people aren't into it enough, so he says, come on everybody, think about the words, understand what it is that we're singing. Asher b'charbanu mikol ha'amim v'nasan lanu es tarasa. Do you understand what it means? The Ribono shel Olam chose us, he gave us the Torah. We are the Am HaNivchar, do you understand it? And they start singing again. So I'd like to focus the rest of the shiur on this, because I find it to be such a challenge to understand when all of this is going on around us and when we have tragedy after tragedy compounding every single day over the last 2.5 months and before that as well. I don't know about you. Have you ever asked yourself? Don't be embarrassed, but have you ever asked yourself, think for yourself, is this the way the chosen people should be treated? Anyone ever wonder that? So clearly, Rav Shmuel Yaniv is not thinking about that. Clearly, after losing three grandchildren, he still believes, I'm part of the Am HaNivchar, and I'm proud that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has chosen me. But it's a very complex statement to make. You're the Am HaNivchar, you're the chosen people, you're the nation that is closest to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and this is how he treats you? Something doesn't add up. So I decided after I saw that, I was so touched, but I was also very confused. So I went onto the Yad Vashem website. I've never been on there in my life. But I went onto the Yad Vashem website, and I did a search for Atah V'chartanu Mikol Ha'am. I was curious. Did any of those survivors speak about this issue? Did anybody have something to say about how they felt about being deemed the Am HaNivchar when everything they just experienced is so raw in their minds? I was curious, did they all respond in the same way that he did? And what I found was very interesting. I found three different articles that had what to say about this issue. not articles, interviews. Three different interviews that were done, I think, by professionals in Yad Vashem, or Yad Vashem just cataloged all of them. You can all go online, you can find them on your own. One of them was Rabbi Yehuda Amital. That was the first one. Rav Amital was the Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshivat Har Etzion. He was also a survivor. His life was not defined by his being a survivor. It was defined by everything that he did after he survived. Look what he built and look what he did. And being a Rosh Yeshiva, L'shem U'L'Tiferes, and he was involved in politics and he took positions in the government. And he really put himself out there to build Eretz Yisrael. So he was born in 1924 in Transylvania. When the war broke out, he was obviously a very young child. And he went through a very, very difficult experience when he was running away from the Nazis. He was finally mishuchrar. He was finally released on Simchas Torah Tavshin Hei. He came to Eretz Yisrael by himself. Srid Yachid Mishpachto. Not one surviving member of his family. And they interviewed him. And the interviewer asked him, "Migata la'acharei ha-shoah le'maskanot nosafot benogei la'olamecha hadati." Did anything change in your religious perspectives as you went through the war? So you started off, you grew up in a religious family. You were a God-fearing Jew. You were a family of believers. Now, your entire family was wiped out. You're left alone as a yasom. Not one family member has survived with you. You're here in Eretz Yisrael. You don't know where to go. You don't know where to build, what to do. Did anything change in your mind through this experience of the Shoah and everything you've seen over those couple of years that you were in Europe, in Hungary? And he says, listen, your question is not phrased properly. You asked me, did I come to any maskana? Did I come to a conclusion? He said, life doesn't have conclusions. I don't know. There's a lot up in the air. There's a lot of things going on. If you want to know what's happening in my head, I'm happy to share that. But if you want to know what my conclusions are, I don't have conclusions. Life is not so clear to me. And I thought that point in itself was already very valuable. You don't always have to have a conclusive answer to everything. We don't always know the end of the story. And he says, I don't know the end of the story either. But he says, I'll tell you this, he says, Ani nisharti b'maskana sh'ani ma'amin. My bottom line conclusion is that some came out of the war and stopped believing. I came out of the war and continued to believe. That was my decision that I made. Zu maskana ishit sheli. That was my personal conclusion. Nobody else has to do what I do, but that's how I feel. I feel even though I saw everything I saw, I experienced everything I did, my conclusion personally was, I'm going to remain a believer. Hamaskana sheli hi she'ani mamshich lahamin ba'akadosh baruch hu. So the bottom line conclusion is, I will continue to believe. However, he says, don't think that I don't have all kinds of very conflicting questions and memories and feelings going through my head. So I do believe, but I have a lot happening up there. Ani mispalel, he says, I daven. And to be honest, he's being very honest, yesh li bayot. I come to shul every day, I open the siddur, but I have trouble. I am struggling as I look at some of the words. Ani choshev lefamim. I think to myself every so often, Ech hispalelu es hatfilos ha'ela be'Auschwitz. Those Jews who were in Auschwitz, how do they get up every day and daven? How do they say these words that are troubling me? Midei pam ani nizkar. Every so often I remind myself about Yom Kippur and Rosh Hashanah, and I say to myself, on these very holy days, on all of the special days on the Jewish calendar, we say, Atah v'chartonu mikol ha'amim. And he says, of all the different paragraphs in our tefillah, this one really stood out at me. You're standing in Auschwitz, you're experiencing everything that you are, and you're saying, Atah v'chartonu. So he says, I wonder to myself, how do the Jewish people say, Atah v'chartonu then? Fascinating. That's what troubled him. Lots of other portions of the davening he was okay with. But Atah v'chartonu is very hard to wrap your head around. You chose us? Echad advarm sh'ani shoel asatzmi, something that I ask myself is, Eich anashim hispalelu. He said, I saw people who davened after the war was over. I saw people who davened in the middle of the war experience. I don't understand it. And he says, Shabbos morning you get up and you say, Nishmas kol chai, tevorech hashimcha. We thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu al kol hachasadim on all the great things that he did for us. He said, Maybe if you were saved and you're a survivor, you have what to say thank you for. Maybe. And even that, even if you were a survivor, look what you just lived through and look how many family members you lost. It's hard to even say thank you then. But if you were oppressed and ultimately killed in Auschwitz, how did you say Nishmas the Shabbos before? What are you thanking HaKadosh Baruch Hu for? So that was one interesting interview that I found. The second one was what they have there from Moshe Plinker. I don't know who that is, but the title of his interview, or it's not an interview, it's his Yoman. He kept a journal. So the title of this entry in his journal is Chag HaShavuos V'Sugyas Ha'am HaNivcha. The title of this is, it's Shavuos today, and on Shavuos we think about how HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose us, and he says, I'm really struggling to figure out where the Am HaNivchar piece fits in here. So I don't know anything about this Moshe Plinker, I didn't have a chance to research him, but he writes the following on Ches Sivan Shnas Tavshin Gimel. Esmol Haya Shavuos. Yesterday was Shavuos. Chag HaShavuos is Chag HaKatzir Haya Esmol Le'Amenu. Our people celebrated yesterday what we refer to as Chag HaKatzir. And he says, unfortunately, so many of our people have been cut down. Chag HaKatzir. So to him, that was just reminiscent of all the terrible atrocities he had experienced. And he said, I remember in the days of yore when in our congregations, in our communities, in our shuls, we had prachim, we had beautiful flowers that we would put out on Shavuos. And he said, now, unfortunately, this is not the reality. Here I am in whatever camp he was in. And, of course, this is not something that is a reality for this year's Shavuos. Then he goes into the history of the Jewish people. And he says that we are continuous nirdafim. We are always being oppressed. And it seems that all the nations of the world who are with us don't seem to really care. So that's the reality of my life right now, he says. And here we are a day after Shavuos, and I'm just sharing my thoughts. He says, it used to be when I said the tefillah of Mechaya HaMesim every day when I davened Shmona Esrei. Amartia tamid bi'i kavana hayoser gdola. I didn't pay attention to Tchiyas HaMesim. I lived in my house. My parents were alive. My grandparents were alive. My great-grandparents, I didn't even remember. I'm not looking forward to Tchiyas HaMesim so much because I don't even remember who they are. So there was nobody in my life who I worried about Tchiyas HaMesim. And he said, when I said the bracha, it really didn't resonate with me. Tchiyas HaMesim was not something that was on my radar screen. It wasn't something that I thought about. Now he says, when I say the bracha, I don't offer it as a tefillah to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that someday we should have a Tchiyas HaMesim, but he says, I say it as a tza'aka. I cry out to the Ribono Shel Olam that you should be mechaye me. I'm a dead person walking. I have nothing inside of me. I have no drive to live. Take all of the dead people that are alive here and be mechaye them. Give them a reason to live. Give them some kind of focus, some kind of perspective. Give them some kind of hope for the future. Be mechaya us. Don't be mechaya everybody else. I don't worry right now about everybody else who passed away already. I'm worrying about me who's surviving. Give me life. Allow me to feel some kind of goal or purpose in my life. So that's number one. Then he writes, B'meshach kama shnos hagala shaninam shilashnum ve'alfanam kvar. He says, you know, we have a sitter, and we've been saying many, many tefillos for the many millennia of Jewish history, and we've gone through a lot of difficult times. And he says, it seems to me that the words Ata Bechartana were also said even through the Spanish Inquisition and through all of these different terrible times that the Jewish people lived. I assume they didn't cut it out of the Siddur because it's still there. So he writes, I got to the words Ata Bechartana, and I thought to myself, Cain, Ata Bechartana, yes, you chose us, but now I'm wondering, what does that choice mean for me? So I'm part of the chosen people, but what does Ata Bechartana mean? So he says, I say the words because I assume that all the generations who suffered before me also said these words. After all, it's still in my Siddur, but I don't really understand where Ata Bechartana fits in. And finally, they have a story there about the Kleisenberger Rebbe. In 1943, the Germans brought thousands of Jews from Auschwitz to Warsaw, And they wanted them to do backbreaking labor the entirety of the day to clean up Warsaw from the mess that was there. They wanted Warsaw to look nice. So one of the Jews who was brought there was the Kloisenberger Rebbe. And somebody who was there together with him turns to him and he says, Rebbe, Hayim tamshich lahaba lomar atavar chartanu? That was his question. He asked the Kloisenberger Rebbe, are you going to say atavar chartanu after we get out of this hell? Again, a lot of questions that people can be asking, but this seems to be the question that happened, that was ruminating in the minds of so many of these survivors. Now at that point, they didn't survive yet. They didn't know what was going to be. Kloisenberger Rebbe lost his wife and 11 children. And this Jew walks up to him and says, are you going to say Atav HaChatanu? I lost my whole family. You lost your wife and 11 children. And everybody you knew from the community. Heshiv lo ha'admur. The Kloisenberger Rebbe responded, listen carefully. Ad hayom lo amarti zos bekavana haruya. Until today, I never thought properly about the words Atav HaChatanu. I said it. It's part of the davening, I said it. But I never really understood it. Ulam, he says, from now on, me'ata, from now and moving forward, kasher agid Atav HaChatanu achavein yoser v'yoser. From this point on in my life, every time I say Atav HaChatanu, I will have a deeper concentration and more understanding. And this man looks at him, shockingly, what do you mean? And he says, I'll tell you the truth. Mutav li lihishar b'matzav izeh, me'asher lios ke'echad mehem. I would rather for every waking moment of my life to be here than to be like one of these animals who is oppressing us. That's Atav HaChatanu. That I have morals, that I have values, that I stand for something, that I'm an upstanding human being, that I live my life with purpose, not just with a purpose of destruction, of killing, of dismantling a beautiful world. That's Atav HaChatanu. And I'll say it now for the rest of my life with more kavana than I ever said it before. Because I realize I would rather be a Jew, regardless of what the price is, than to be somebody like this, who can do such atrocities to us. We're all familiar with the pogrom in Hebron. That was Tafresh Peites, 1929. And that was obviously a terrible, terrible time as well. And of course, the Slabodka Yeshiva that was in Hebron took a very serious blow. There were many people who were injured, many people who were hurt, some who were killed. And it was a very depressing time. And the problem was, the yeshiva was trying to figure out how to get themselves back on their feet. What were they going to do? How can you encourage people to try and come back? Maybe not to that location, but even just the memories of everything that they experienced together. So it came that year on Rosh Hashanah. Reb Leib Chasman was the mashgiach of the yeshiva, a great tzaddik and a great Talmud Chacham. And of course on Rosh Hashanah we try to have some very respectable chazanim, shliach tzibur, who's going to lead the community in the tefillah. And I would imagine in a yeshiva, they would choose very carefully who was going to be the chazan. That year, Rosh Hashanah, Reb Leib Chasman walked in before Rosh Hashanah and he told one of the young men in the yeshiva, his name was Bezalel, he said, I want you to daven for the Yamud Rosh Hashanah night. And this Bezalel was a young student in the yeshiva and he said, I'm going to daven for the Yamud Rosh Hashanah. First of all, I'm not married. And the Shulchan Aruch says, really, a chazan is supposed to be married on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. Second of all, he says, I'm not worthy. In our yeshiva, we always have the leaders of the yeshiva are the ones to lead us in the tefillah on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. So, I don't understand. Why am I leading the davening this year? Rabbi Leib Chassman wouldn't get into the details, but he said, I've decided you're going to be the chazan, you're going to be the shliach tzibur tonight for the davening of Ma'ariv and Rosh Hashanah. So he puts on a talis, and he starts the tefillah. He gets through the first bracha of Kriya Shema, which is Ma'ariv Aravim. And the next bracha is Abba Solom. And everybody's waiting at the end for the chazan to finish off the bracha. It's normally what happens going into Kriya Shema. And all they hear is this Baal Tefillah just keeps saying over and over again, Be'ahavascha al tasir mimenu li'olamim. All he keeps saying to himself over and over, and he started to sing it, Be'ahavascha al tasir mimenu li'olamim, that your love for us should never fade forever. And suddenly the entire yeshiva, we don't usually make a hefsik in the middle of Birchas Kriya Shema, we don't stop in the middle for other things, but the entire yeshiva joined him in saying these words over and over and over again for an hour. Ve'ahavascha al tasir mimenu li'olamim. And Rabbi Leib Chassman said after the davening, now I know that we will be able to rebuild the yeshiva. If our response as a community is to double down on our understanding of Eye Asher Eye, of the Ahavasta al Tasir Mimenu Liolamim, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's love, whatever we go through, but His love will never fade, and His appreciation for the Jewish people will always be present, will always be there, then I know now that we can rebuild the yeshiva and we can build a community from here. But that's what I needed. I needed a young man to break down and make everyone understand. V'ahavascha al tasir mimenu liolamim. Our world runs with such precision. I know nothing about zmanei hayom, the shkia, and when the sun rises, when the sun sets. There are some calendar people who know when Pesach is going to fall out for the next 25 years, right? You know such people? Some people who understand everything about the calendar, and I always marvel. I don't know how they know all of this. There must be some kind of algorithm that they're aware of. They know how it works. They know the system. I don't understand it. I don't know how it works. If someone's going to send me an email, I'll teach you. It's fine. I don't need to learn it. It's fine. I have a calendar. I find what I need to know. I don't need to know what's in the next 20 years. It's okay. But some people really understand these things. And what I marvel at is the precision of the way our world runs. Every single day, the sun rises exactly when they predict it's going to rise. Everything in our world is set up so perfectly. Now, we don't appreciate it until we have somebody who unfortunately is in the hospital, or a child is born with some kind of defect and needs an emergency surgery, and we ask, what was wrong? What was the surgery for? Well, this little artery was in the wrong place, or that little opening wasn't there. Openings that we don't think about, arteries that we don't consider. Our world is very, very precise. Think about the way we eat and the way we breathe. It's fascinating. If chalila, a person would mix up one of those two pipes, they would die. They would suffocate. They wouldn't be able to breathe. And the Ribbono Shel Olam set up our bodies perfectly, that we should have the opportunity both to eat and also to breathe. And we have a little piece of skin that covers over one side or the other. It's amazing. It's amazing. So we understand that everything in the world is orchestrated by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And if that's the case, anybody ever wonder? The Ribbono Shel Olam can figure out how to create my body the way He did. How to make sure that when I breathe and I eat, I don't have any confusion. The Ribbono Shel Olam figured out how to make my arteries work exactly the way they should. And everything else in the world that we know, He knows how to make the sun rise at the perfect time every day, and how to make sure that Pesach is going to fall out on this day the next 25 years. Everything is precise. Nothing changes. Everything is there. Ein chadash tachas hashamesh. So the Ribono shel Olam is carefully orchestrating everything and curating the events of our lives. If that's the case, so why is it that it seems that everything with the Jewish people is so random? If everything in the world is so precise, how is it that all of these crazy random things seem to happen to us? Where's the hashgacha there? There's hashgacha on everything else. So what, the Ribono shel Olam forgot about how to be mashgiach over the Jewish people? The Ribono shel Olam forgot that on October 7th he should make sure to protect us and things like this shouldn't happen, that we're going to become the laughingstock of the world? How can this be? So how do you understand it? So we look to our Nevi'im. We look to our Nevi'im to try to understand how to make sense of this. What do the Nevi'im say? The Navi Amos, one of the greatest of the Nevi'im, opens up a Nevu'ah and he says, Shimu es hadavar hazeh. I'm sorry, as I said, I forgot to copy this. Shimu es hadavar hazeh, he says, I'd like to get your attention. Listen to what I'm saying. I have a message for you from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And he starts off by saying, Rak eschem yadati mikol mishpuchos ha'adama. You are the only ones that I know, mikol mishpuchos ha'adama. Now the Mefarshim struggle. What does it mean, you're the only ones that I know? What, the Ribono shel Olam doesn't know about the Chinese? The Ribono shel Olam doesn't know about people who live in South Africa? So what does it mean, you, the Jewish people, are the only ones, yadati mikol mishpuchos ha'adama? Rashi suggests there in the Navi Amos, what does it mean? Rak eschem yadati, you are the only ones I know. Says Rashi, yadati doesn't mean no. Yadati in Torah language means love. We are told in Parshas Vayera, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Ki yida'ativ. He's talking about Avraham Avinu. Why do I love him? And the way that he refers to it is, yida'ativ. I love Avraham Avinu. Vayeda Adam, it says, Adam knew his wife when they got married. What does it mean he knew his wife? It means he loved his wife. When you come to know someone very well, you love them. Or you should. That's what yadati means. And here the Ribono shel Olam starts off and he says, Rak eschem yadati mikol mishpuchos ha'adama. You are the ones, the Jewish people are the ones who I love. Mikol mishpuchos ha'adama. Now, with such a beautiful introduction, the Ribono shel Olam says, Shimu es devar Hashem. Listen to what I have to tell you. You are the only ones that I love. Imagine you're sitting down with your children and you want to tell them how much you appreciate them. So what do you say? You are the ones who I focus on more than anyone else in the world. You are the ones who I love more than anyone else in the world. What's the end of the sentence? And therefore, I don't know, something good is going to come after that. And therefore, because I love you so much, therefore, I don't know, finish it off on your own. Therefore, you are the ones who are listed in my Yerusha. I don't know. No. Therefore, you are the ones who I'm going to give this to and not somebody else. I was about to buy a new car and I want you to know, because I love you so much, I'm going to buy the car for you. I'm not going to buy it for our neighbor's kid. Of course, I love the neighbors also, but not like I love you. So I'm going to buy the new car, or we're going to go on a great vacation because I love you so much. So the Ribono shel Olam starts off with this dramatic opening in his discussion with the Jewish people, and he says, Rak eschem yadati, you are the only ones that I love, you are the ones that I know most intimately, you are the people that I appreciate more than anyone else, and here's the end of the sentence. You ready? Here we go. Alkein, therefore, how would you end it? You're not sure. Therefore, Efkod aleichem eskol avonoseichem. I love you so much, and therefore, I will hold you accountable for all of your sins. How lovely. So I love you, my children, and because I love you, we are not going on vacation. And because I love you, I am not going to buy you the car. Because I love you, I'm going to punish you. That's what the Torah says here. That's what the Navi shares with us. Now, if you're having a hard time understanding what this means, so do I. So what does it mean? What does it mean? The Radak writes in his commentary there on Navi Amos, What kind of ending of a sentence is that? The Ribbono Shel Olam loves you and therefore he punishes you? So the Radak says, imagine, he talks about a king. We don't really have kings today, so we don't really appreciate it. So imagine in our context, in our understanding, President of the United States. So you have some guy in the middle of Times Square this week, I'm making it up, I don't know, who gets up in his pajamas, looking like a lunatic, totally drunk, and he starts cursing out the President of the United States. I don't like his policies about this, and I don't like his that. Does anybody pay? He's not hurting anyone. He's just on his own. He's rambling. But everybody hears him. So does anybody actually care what he says? No, nobody cares. Why? Because the amount of steps that there are of separation, the amount of degrees of separation that are between himself and the president are so many that literally what he says is irrelevant. Nobody cares what you think or what you say or what you share with other people. You're a lunatic. Imagine if the vice president of the United States would stand up on international TV one day and say, you know, the president of the United States is really crazy. And he has no business being the president. And I don't trust any of his policies. And I don't agree with any of his statements that he makes. And I think all of the decisions that he has made since he's come into this position have been wrong. I think all of his advisors are giving him horrible advice. And I'm ashamed to be a part of his team. What would happen to that vice president? I would hope he or she, whoever it would be fired. What do you mean? But what did I say differently than the lunatic in the middle of Times Square? What's the difference? No, so what's the difference? Difference is you're part of the cabinet. We expect more of you. You have to support the policies that we as a cabinet put forward. You have to support the position that we hold. Does it mean that every single citizen of the United States needs to be happy? No. That's a democracy. Not everybody's happy. Does it mean every single person needs to agree with what we're doing? No. But it means you, who's closest to me, certainly need to understand your position demands of you that you behave in a different way than everybody else. And just because there are lunatics in Times Square who say whatever they say doesn't mean you have the right to behave like them. We expect more of you. Says the Radak, that's what it means. HaKadosh Baruch Hu introduces the conversation by saying, Rak eschem ahavti amar Hashem. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you are the ones that I love. You are the ones that I appreciate and I know more intimately than anyone else. And that means you are not the bum, the lunatic in Times Square who's sitting there and has a right to do whatever you want. You are held accountable. You are held to a higher standard. Efkod al avonoseichem. You're held accountable. Why? Because you're part of the cabinet. You hold a different position than everybody else. Of course, there are millions of human beings all over the world. All of them should be doing things. But you need to realize that you have a greater responsibility. You are part of the inner circle of the Ribbono Shel Olam. You are the vice president who works closest with the president himself. And therefore you're held to a higher standard, says the Radak. That's what it means. The closer you are to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the higher the standard is. So the Gemara asks in Maseches Nedarim, Mipnei ma nenash Avraham Avinu, let's make no mistake. This story of Galus Mitzrayim, the story of the Jewish people being in exile, was not something that happened with Yaakov Avinu and his children in a vacuum. We knew this already. Avraham Avinu was told two generations earlier, Yadoa teida ki ger yezaracha be'eretz lo lahem. Avraham Avinu was told, your grandchildren, your great-grandchildren are all going to be stuck in Mitzrayim for many, many years, for decades. Ask the Gemara, what did Avraham Avinu do to deserve that? Why should his grandchildren have to suffer? Was there something that Avraham Avinu didn't do right? Being the first one to recognize the presence and the existence of the Ribbono Shel Olam, being the greatest Baal Chesed that he was, doing everything that he did in his life, what did Avraham Avinu do to deserve this punishment of his grandchildren being held captive in exile in Mitzrayim? It's the question that the Gemara asks. And the Gemara gives some kind of convoluted answer. The Gemara gives three different opinions. Maybe it was this moment of Avraham Avinu's life that went wrong. Maybe it was that moment. Maybe it was this thing. three different episodes in Avraham Avinu's life where it seems that he went wrong, based on the way the Gemara understands it. And because of that, that is why Avraham Avinu needed to be punished, and that is why his great-grandchildren had to suffer in Mitzrayim Arba Meos Shana. Now, the Maharal, in trying to break down what exactly is the Gemara getting at, what is the Gemara saying? Avraham Avinu did some things wrong. Bottom line, what is the Nakuda? What is the, not the source, what is the point of all the three opinions in the Gemara that brought Avraham Avinu to be punished? And he postulates, he suggests, the Maharal writes, perhaps all three of the opinions in the Gemara are getting at the same point. And that is, there was some kind of lack on Avraham Avinu's level of his emunah in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. As great as Avraham Avinu was, and as much as he has accomplished, what the Gemara is pointing out was, there was something lacking in his emunah. On these three stories that the Gemara recounts, we don't have time to get into it, but it's a Gemara. And the Maharal says, if you think about the common theme between all three of these stories, it's there was some lack of emunah in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Which is why, at the climax, when the Jewish people come out of Mitzrayim, what are we told? Vayamein ha'am. The people believed. Vayaminu b'Hashem uv'Moshe avdo. The entire experience of this exile was only to bring the Jewish people to an understanding that you need to believe. You need to be strong. That was the chisaron, says the Gemara, that Avraham Avinu had in the first place. And the tikkun had to be, the Jewish people needed to be made, to be brought to a place where they could unquestionably believe that the Ribono Shel Olam is the superpower of their lives. That the Ribono Shel Olam is everything to them. And it's not that you're going to rely on the United States, and it's not that you're going to rely on this or on that or on all of your security apparatus that you have put together over the last 80 years of a country. And it's not going to be your faith in this or that or any of your intelligence that you claim you have. It's going to be finally an understanding of what it means to live life feeling the Ribono Shel Olam's presence every single day. That was the outcome of Yitzias Mitzrayim, Vayaminu b'Hashem uv'Moshe avdo, Vayamein ha'am, and that is the forecast of every subsequent galus as well. As we're told, the sneh einenu ukal, the Jewish people are still here. The sneh boer ba'esh, at times, the Jewish people are on fire, and there's a raging fire right now. But hasneh einenu ukal, HaKadosh Baruch Hu promised us, Eyeh asher Eyeh. Eyeh imayim begalas zu, ve'eyeh imayim begalas acheres. I was with them and I am with them through this terrible time in exile in Mitzrayim, and I will be with them in every subsequent experience of galus as well. But we need to remember the root of what the first galus was. Says the Maharal, the root of the first galus was some kind of lack of our understanding of the primary role and focus that HaKadosh Baruch Hu needs to be in all of our lives. The outcome of Yitzias Mitzrayim was that unquestionable faith, that emunah that was so clear to everyone. They saw the Ribono Shel Olam at Maimon Har Sinai, which was really the focus of why they came out of Mitzrayim, was Tavdun Es Elokim Al Ha'har Hazeh. The whole reason they came out of Mitzrayim was that they should have the opportunity to experience the Ribono Shel Olam by Har Sinai. And that is what we look forward to as well. David HaMelech, when he wanted to build the Beis HaMikdash, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, ultimately it's going to happen. The Beis HaMikdash is going to be rebuilt. And the Navi says in Sefer Shmuel, quoting the Ribono Shel Olam himself, V'samti makom la'ami Yisrael unetativ. I will once again make a place, a Beis HaMikdash, for Ami Yisrael, for the Jewish people. V'shachein tachta v'lo yirgaz od. And what is going to happen then? Once our focus comes back to where it's supposed to be, to that place of Isamti Makom La'ami Yisrael, once everybody is refocused once again on their attention to the primary role that the Ribbono Shel Olam plays in all of our lives, then, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Lo Yosifu B'nei Avla La'anoso Ka'asher Barishona, then they will never again suffer. But that's what we look forward to. To Binyan Beis HaMikdash, which will allow us to have the opportunity to be refocused once again on what it means to have the Ribbono Shel Olam in our lives. And once that happens, says the Navi, Lo Yosifu B'nei Avla La'anoso. They will no longer be gullus. They will no longer be all of this oppression. We will no longer have to deal with all of these threats and all of these concerns, because once again, our focus will be brought back. Ve'ya'amein ha'am, ve'ya'aminu ba'Hashem, uv'moshe avdo. And that is what we look forward to. That is what we pray for every day. B'sechazena einenu b'shuvcha l'tzion b'rachamin. When we talk about coming back to a Beis HaMikdash, it's not just the Beis HaMikdash, it's understanding that in that utopian life of Beis HaMikdash life, when we have the opportunity to focus once again on what the real aspects of life are supposed to be about, then and only then, says the Navi, will we have the opportunity to also experience the blessings of Beis HaMikdash, of Elo Yosifu B'nei Avla La'anoso. Mirtz Hashem.